Hey, this is Dave Saunders with the GlycoBoy Health and Wellness Podcast. As a reminder, you can always read more detailed information by visiting my main website at www.glycowellness.com. This episode's topic is, I think, a really important one. Before we start talking about alternative medicine or different areas of nutrition, really want to kind of cover why has information on nutrition become so complicated. You know, it seems that every day there's a new article or new report published about a diet being good for us, or a diet we thought was good suddenly turns out to be bad. A study suggesting that a vitamin has newfound health benefits is published the same week. Another tells us it harms the health of certain people. Now, is the entire world confused, or do we just not understand the context into which all the information, even that which appears contradictory, fits? And it seems logical that nutrition should be incredibly simple. And yet this deluge of information leads us to conclude that it isn't possible for anyone to understand what's good for us and what's bad for us. And by being able to put information from this field into context, it is possible to navigate the sea of data and understand why information on nutrition appears to have become so complicated. Now, in the beginning, nutrition was incredibly simple. We didn't need to know anything. Pieces of plants were picked and eaten immediately. That's what a hunter-gatherer does. And some of these plants would make us very ill. And sometimes only certain parts of the plants made us sick and other parts were tasty and nourishing. And we simply avoided what we learned to be bad. And in adaptation that is unique to humanity, we taught others to avoid bad foods through commandments and lore, and everything else was basically good by default. Now, eventually, humankind moved from being simple hunter-gatherers to basic farmers. And some estimates are that this move alone increased food production efficiency by over 50 times. And this sparked the rise of civilization because some people were now able to stay in one location and develop skills and crafts which benefited the rest of the tribe, while others produced enough food to feed everyone else. Because the nutritional value of food is at its maximum when it is ingested directly from the moment of harvesting, the nutritional value of the food did in fact lower slightly as the delay between harvesting and eating it increased. Even so, food was still very nutritious and contained very few preservatives apart from the brine used to preserve some foods for long-term storage. Now, around this time, different societies began to develop the understanding that certain foods were beneficial depending on a person's state of health. Sometimes these foods contained phytochemicals that controlled symptoms, and other times they simply contained high concentrations of nutrients that were specifically beneficial for a person's particular needs at the time of illness. For example, women would eat iron-rich foods during menstruation to counteract iron deficiency during the period of blood loss. At the time, they didn't realize their lack of energy and other symptoms were due to iron deficiency. They simply knew that if they ate certain foods, they'd feel better. Now, what some regard today as so-called old wives' tales actually represent the first understanding of the relationship between diet and an improved quality of life. And the further humankind moved away from a hunter-gatherer lifestyle, the more important this information became. Now, fast forward to the mid-20th century. At this point, society has made a major shift from an agrarian lifestyle to an industrial age lifestyle. And the percentage of the population directly involved in the production of food was approaching the 2% that it is today. In the United States, children were no longer getting up early and working on farms until sundown. Instead, they were getting up, having the same large breakfast their parents and their parents' parents had every morning before going out to work on the farm, but instead they would go to a public school where they would sit at their desks for several hours a day. Now, after school, they'd go to this local diner and they'd have a burger and French fries and a malt, only to come home and eat a large dinner with the family. And the cardiovascular disease went through the roof. And the medical community responded by blaming the massive fat intake associated with all the foods. And these commonly eaten foods once provided large amounts of calories to people working hard labor on the farm. They did not serve a person working at a desk job, an assembly line, or while attending school. And unfortunately, the available research at the time did not differentiate the negative effects that certain fats had on the body over others. And so what we ended up with was this all fat is bad dogma. And the resulting fat-free diet hysteria, interestingly enough, did not result in a lowering of the obesity rate or the cardiovascular disease rate. But people followed these guidelines just the same. And as food products such as margarine, vegetable shortening, and processed oils were introduced to the market, the available medical data simply could not recognize the detrimental effect these fats would have on long-term health compared to the fats they were replacing. Now, another area of confusion involved naturally occurring versus artificially made compounds. In the field of nutrient study, scientists believed that they could duplicate anything in nature more efficiently and more effectively than nature could do so itself. And while some researchers continued to study naturally occurring vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and other forms of nutrients in their natural state, and seeing incredibly beneficial results from those studies, other researchers studied the artificial forms of these compounds, and we've seen some of these recent reports suggesting antioxidants actually killing people. Only those able to read the specific data behind the studies were realizing the growing picture that is validated more and more each day. Artificially created nutrients simply were not as effective in the body as naturally occurring ones. In fact, in some cases, they're actually harmful. Now, to the untrained eye, naturally occurring and artificially compounds appear to be the same. And to many journalists, these differences are not apparent in the published studies unless it's explicitly stated, and it very rarely is. And this leads to a great deal of confusion when the journalists are often the ones regurgitating study information through the media without a complete understanding of the underlying issues or their context. And so their inability to properly filter this information only makes it appear more self-contradictory and confusing. So while to some it may appear obvious that naturally occurring compounds are more bioavailable and efficacious than artificial ones, such assertions could not be logically proven until the data was available for review. Seems logical, right? And so this does make it seem as though the past several generations of humankind have been guinea pigs to trial and error, and all of the errors involve humankind attempting to synthesize nature or drastically narrow the food supply and selection for the sake of economic efficiency. And we know that goes completely against the very tenets of nature, because nature, by design, is incredibly diverse. And as omnivores, human beings are designed and or adapted to also be incredibly diverse when it comes to the nutrition and nutritional sources that we benefit from. So when we look back on some of these mistakes, it's apparent that they were largely made due to incomplete data, and certainly an amount of hubris was mixed in there as well. Now, moving forward, we've got to realize that the further humankind moves from the hunter-gatherer that we were designed to be, the more important the study of nutrition will become. And for the past 100 years or so, the basis of nutritional study has been a simple categorization of what is good for us and what is not good for us down to the molecular level. In the future, and we're already seeing this in some areas, nutritional science will need to embrace the synergistic effects, both good and bad, of what we put in our body. This, of course, makes the study of nutrition a little bit more complex, but as we realize these things, like, for example, foods, commonly eaten foods, can actually cancel out or even amplify the effect of certain pharmaceutical drugs. That's an important thing to know. So that we, if we do have to take a drug, we can make sure that we're not canceling out the effects, or actually increasing its toxicity and potentially putting our lives at danger. So, you know, at the heart of all of this confusion is a desire for simple answers. We'd all be comfortable with a simple recommendation to eat a certain way and just be done with it. And given the right context, this sort of information is possible. But we need to balance how we were designed to receive nutrition originally with the reality of modern life and modern agriculture. So what can you do? Well, understand that we need to be aware of nutrition because we no longer live the lifestyle of a hunter-gatherer. So that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. And again, you can always visit www.glycowellness.com to learn more. And you can also hop on my free newsletter list there and get new news and information about these topics. Until next time.